Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here are your hosts of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Holsinger, Dr. Payray, and Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Millennial Dentist Podcast. Pretty excited about this. I'm back in town, back in Memphis, back where the roots were, where we went to dental school with some of my good buddies from dental school. We're here for one of our other good buddies' wedding. I met you, so shout out to you, buddy. We wish you were here. I know you're probably getting ready. So with me, I'm going to let you all introduce yourselves. Three dentists, three buddies. Gannon, why don't you go first?
I'm Gannon Van Allen.
Dr. Gannon Van Allen.
Dr. Gannon Van Allen. The Gannon Van Allen, friends of this Sully Sullivan character right here.
This is his first time, so we're going to have to give him a slot. You got to speak
talking
up
to
a
the
little
mic, talking to the
here,
mic.
Let me break
talking
in here.
To the mic, talk,
my name.
To the mic,
you also have to, like, we can't.
Mic check, 1-2, 1-2.
We have to be.
My name is Lieutenant Christopher Rawson, DDS. That's doctor from University of Tennessee, also known as Lil Red, a.k.a. Possum.
Nerd.
That's fantastic. Kyle, where are you at?
Dr. Kyle Taylor from Searcy, Arkansas. I'm not in the military.
So we have two people here. So Gannon and Chris, y'all are in the Navy, correct?
Yes.
So I'm excited about this for a lot of reasons. One is we have yet to interview somebody that's actively in the military. And we have a lot of listeners who are considering going into military post-dental school. And frankly, because I think it's a phenomenal way to beat down debt, the way the debt load is getting. What I'd love for y'all two to do, and Kyle, we're going to bring you on this, and I want you to ask, you're going to kind of co-host this with me, I think, is I want y'all to tell me about what kind of got y'all into deciding to go into the military. How did you pick your branch? And like, what was the process like? Because that's a question a lot of listeners have. Chris, one of y'all take it away.
I mean, Navy, no doubt. Hey, hold on. What branch are you
in, Chris? The microphone.
Navy.
Damn right.
Navy so,
all the way.
So two midshipmen.
Booyah! Midshipmen.
Are y'all not the midshipmen? That's college?
No. Yeah, that's college.
Okay.
That's the academy.
So two Navy guys.
What made us choose the Navy?
Yeah. At what point did you decide that the military is how you were going to go post-grad?
Graduating debt-free was a big perk.
It's nice. Sully, where are you going to be practicing for the next 40 years?
Nashville. Now, probably.
So, where you left dental school?
No.
You left dental school and you went to Nashville, correct?
Correct. Fact.
And you're going to be there for the next 40, 50 years?
Most likely, yes.
Any opportunity to leave, travel, see any other country outside this country?
No. I see where you're going with this.
There you go.
All right.
Go Navy.
So a big perk for you, though, was to get out of, was to kind of see the world. I mean, where have you been?
The opportunities to travel are nice. You got going to be stuck down to one city.
I don't remember. When did y'all have to decide to do this? What year were y'all?
I decided before dental school. How about you?
So, yeah, you got to do it before dental school. If you try in dental school, you don't get nearly as good a deal.
Really?
That's not in the Navy.
That's true. To get the maximum benefit, you want to decide before dental school. You can talk to a recruiter. Turns out they're great guys to talk to. They will more than willingly help you. But you need to decide before if that's something that you want to talk to or thinking about doing. That's definitely worth doing.
Did it impact how dental school was at all for y'all? Chris, how is that how you went too? You did a recruiter and the whole nine yards before?
Yeah, recruiter. Yep. Got my letter of acceptance and then sent in my application and then got accepted shortly thereafter.
So then you go into dental school and you just do dental school.
Yep.
Where do you find, like, at what point do you decide when you're stationed or where you're going?
Kind of depends on if you're trying to pursue like a GPR or an AGD or specialty training, or if you want to just go through into a credentialing program. At that point, you probably start looking at billets, you know, sometime in the spring, January.
A D4 year, right?
Yeah, D4 year, January, February, you're going to start talking to a detailer.
I think I think for myself, I got an email from the detailer saying, what region of the country do you want to live in? And I said, you know, I'd prefer the Southeast. Go Vols. And you know, and she said, how about, you know, and I had a preference for Parris Island. I was lucky enough to have some captains that worked at my school that recommended that area. And so I put a recommendation in that, and I was lucky to get that spot. Chris obviously was able to get an even or equally cool spot, if not cooler.
Chris, where'd you go?
San Diego.
So did you, but you did something. Did you end up doing a GPR?
I did a GPR.
So what makes you decide to do that versus, well, I don't understand. I don't know the benefits of a GPR and
sure.
military.
So in the military, if you're considering a specialty, you know, by any means, doing a GPR and AGD is automatically going to kind of open a door for you to an extent. If that's something you're still considering.
Is that military specific or are you saying in general?
That's kind of general, but it's very important military specifically. So if you're looking
for military,
right? Think, yeah. So if you're going into the military and you're considering a specialty, doing an AGD or a GPR is almost essential.
So was that a 1 year program?
1 year program.
So you're beyond that.
Yeah.
So are you trying to specialize?
So I'm still trying to keep that door open. I like endodontics. I like oral surgery, but endodontics is something I'm still exploring and getting into. And one of the great perks about the clinic that I work at is I work with a ton of specialists. So I get that opportunity to kind of explore those different specialty areas. And the endodontics department is big. So I get to work with a lot of those guys, pick their brains, figure out what the residency's like, you know, what the future of the career is like. And so it's good.
Okay. So talk about, give me kind of, what does it look like to graduate dental school and go into the military? Like, what's your day-to-day life look like? I mean, are y'all doing dentistry? Were you doing dentistry all the time? I know specifically y'all had to do some other not like military stuff. So like, how does it work? Give me the process.
That was a big question that I had myself. I was wondering what was life going to be? Am I a naval officer? Am I standing watch? Am I doing duty? Am I on a ship? Like, what is going to happen?
Am I going to be overseas? Like, am I going to be in war?
Exactly. And so you work a 8 to 5 generally. That is no very, very similar.
Monday to Friday.
But you're off at 3 every day golfing.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, the fruits are done. I'm gonna go play golf.
Tomato, 5-3 on the golf course.
Turns out there's a golf course on Navy naval base. You do the math. We work an ordinary job like y'all do too, out as far as civilian practice. The big thing is that, you know,
patients can't complain.
We do call like y'all do, I guess, in the sense like, you know, you're responsible for your patients. The difference being is we have what's called duty or watch, which has been, I guess, adapted from like a military watch, what you think of as far as standing guard. It's been adapted to dental officers as far as standing, you know, duty and being on call that night, being responsible for the dental clinic. It rotates through the clinic, so it's not like necessarily like, it's not all the time.
It's not like medicine where you're like going to be going in every night.
No. At the end of the day, I'm the call. You know, if someone has a dental question, if there's a recruit that's, you know, chipped a tooth and they need to figure out what to do with it, they bring them in, they call, and you know, you make the advice, you tell them if they need to come into the clinic or if that can wait till Monday.
Except for the day after Cinco de Mayo. I hear that's a hell of a time. Tell me about that, Gannon.
Busy day in the dental clinic. They're not at liberty to say. So one thing I've heard a lot of is that and I'm talking to other, and this isn't Navy, this is other branches, but that there's a lot of like, kind of like military stuff you have to do. They're like, some like you don't get to do a lot of dentistry early on. Is that true, or is it kind of like blended, or what was the?
I mean, nothing that you wouldn't have expected. You know, I mean, you got to go to training, which I mean, you knew you're gonna get some sort of. Some sort of boot camp training. Like, it's, I don't know, to be honest, it was fun. It was 2 months of a good time in Rhode Island, or how to march when I wear your uniform, respect the, you know, the country.
What level do you come in out of dental school? Like, what are you, like an officer, or are you just, yes, whatever? What do you come in as?
You come in as an officer. Depending on the branch, you're either a lieutenant or a captain.
Okay. Chris? You have to put the mic up, Chris.
What's
the question? So a question for you. So how would you, from day one in the military, is it like a residence? I mean, for you, you did a GPR AG. So that's why I kind of is interesting to hear the difference in dynamic between you, both of y'all. So when you came in, was it like dental school? Were people like doing start checks and watching you, or do you pretty much have free reigns? Are you running like a private practice?
I think so. Talk
about like day-to-day dental life as a dentist in the military.
Right. And I'm sure Gannon can speak differently for the credentialing program, but for the GPR, it's kind of similar. You know, you come in, they kind of assess where you're at skill-based, you know, where you're at with your clinical knowledge, kind of where you're at, you know, speed-wise, and they kind of just throw
that's
you
similar,
in
I think, to like an as if you're coming as an associate, they're going to do the same thing.
Try to fill you out, see where you're at. And then from that point, you know, at least in the GPR residency, they kind of push you in different areas to try and challenge you and, you know, improve your skills. So
yeah, that's a for us. They,
I never felt like I was, you know, never felt like I was babysat, I guess. I felt like I was always kind of just encouraged and was never really restricted in anything I wanted to do per se, at least during my residency.
That's, yeah, maybe that's a little bit of a difference. I did credentialing, so I didn't do a residency. I went straight to the fleet, and they have us do a one-year contract where you're working at a high-volume clinic. They kind of babysit you a little bit. They want to make sure that you can keep speed, that the quality of your care is there, because they know you're coming fresh out of school, and they know this is the last chance the Navy has a chance to watch over your work before you get out to the fleet, and then you're the sole provider on a ship, and you know the buck ends at you at that point. So they want to make sure that you're up to speed. But
I think working at, you know, now working at the clinic that you used to credential at, and looking at the credentialers there, I think you can see that you guys actually become an important asset to the readiness value, you know, that they're striving, or the readiness goal that they're striving for.
I think so. That's an important point, because you're not just there to learn, but you're there to provide for the team.
Yeah, and ultimately,
we have a mission. You know, I mean, I guess your mission is to take care of people and, you know, hopefully make a profit along the way. We're here to provide dental readiness that our Marines and sailors are ready to deploy.
How does that change in, like, with us deploying people to go into war and that sort of stuff? I mean, is there potential for y'all as, like, in those 4 years to be on a ship being, like, you know, going somewhere?
Yeah, absolutely. Opportunity is there if you want it.
Is that kind of something that you kind of pick, or people volunteer for?
It's
very situational.
It's situational. You know, obviously you can tell the world changes, the needs change. Things ramp up or things ramp down, the needs are there. But the opportunity is there. You know, if you want to be on a ship, if that's, you know, you join the Navy and you say, I want to see the world, that's
so Gannon, tell me, we were talking about earlier about an opportunity you're about to have. So tell me about kind of what you're about to go do, because that's kind of cool.
So I volunteered to be on Continuing Promise 2018, which is a humanitarian aid mission down to some Central American countries. And it's an annual process that the Navy does, where go down there and provide dental care for some countries that are in need. And you know, it's an amazing opportunity. If you can, it's about 4 to 6 months of working with you know, people that are in desperate need for care.
Yeah,
and that,
that's way cool.
You know, you get to go down there and proudly wear your uniform and, you know, say, hey, I'm an American, I'm here to help.
Sure. That's cool.
That's an experience that is unique to the military. And it's a proud moment that any American should be happy
100%,
to have.
Gosh, yeah. In what capacity are y'all? I mean, obviously, y'all are bringing a pretty big team. I mean, is it just extractions, or we all have units? Kind of,
We will be doing, it's all medical and dental, but we will be, you know, ranging from cleanings, simple fillings, to extractions, you know, as the population needs. That's what we're there
for.
So
kind of what they need.
And it's not just that we go there and set up a clinic. We also work with the local dentist. So it's
supplies.
You know, we're trying to share our experience, share what we have, but we're also going to learn from them based off their patient needs.
Sure.
It's a learning experience for both sides, but it's not just a, hey, we're here, we're going to pull teeth, okay, we're out. You know, it's trying to make a lasting impact for those countries down there.
That's cool. Chris, question for you. How much, as far as like continuing education, because that's, I think, something that a lot of people wonder about when they go in the military. What kind of opportunities for continuing education do you all have? Like, do they pay for stuff? Do they send you places? Do they bring people in? Talk about kind of your opportunity to continue to learn in the military.
Right. So this has kind of changed over the past few years. But for me now, we'll do one funded CE course for you per year.
That's pretty cool.
Every other year.
Okay.
And then every other year in between, they'll do a non-funded course. So you're eligible to do those courses at Bethesda. The Naval Postgraduate Dental School in Bethesda has a range of CE courses that they offer throughout the year. You can go to any of those courses you like, as long as you get approved through your chain of command, which usually isn't a problem. The matter of funding is kind of what varies from year to year. So this past year, I did an advanced operative course at Bethesda, which was great. It was an excellent course. Sure. I was really glad I attended. And it was completely funded, so it was great. But this year, I'm not eligible for a funded course. I'm still eligible to do those courses, but it's just not going to be federally funded.
Gotcha. Tagging on to that, I got to do advanced endo.
That's awesome.
At Bethesda, at Walter Reed, which that's a unique experience in yourself, getting to work at that clinic and learn with everything that's going on at Walter Reed. So that's the benefits of being, I guess, where you're stationed. Now I'm stationed up in Quantico, so I have the ability to take pretty much as many courses that still allow me to see my patient load at work. So it's a pretty nice gig.
Yeah, that's a pretty unique thing. And I imagine, too, as far as procedure-wise goes, and correct me if I'm wrong, but, do you have the opportunity, to continue to push yourself from a procedural standpoint? I know you have specialists where you're at, but, are the specialists pretty willing to let you do more specialty procedures? Or are you pretty limited to doing general, or how does that work?
I think this is where it kind of varies clinic to clinic. The clinic that I work at, I have the opportunity to work with a lot of specialists. So, whether it's oral surgery, whether it's endo, perio, whatever it is, we're able to keep everything in-house. And it's just a matter of, what the day-to-day schedule is, what the needs are, and what you can do with the time that you're given.
So if one of your patients comes in and they have four impacted wisdom teeth, and you kind of want to do them, do you have the opportunity to go to talk to a surgeon, and work through the case and do it? Or they don't cherry pick stuff out?
No, exactly. Yeah. So actually, at this point, and this is something that I've been privileged of, at least at the clinic that I work at now, is they actually, I got to work with a chairside with an oral surgeon for 4 weeks doing impacted wisdom teeth. So he showed me all the nuts and bolts.
That's awesome.
Showed me all his strategies, how to deal with the complications. So at this point now, they're using me as a tool when their numbers are high, or they have needs. The number of patients that are coming in the clinic, they'll actually put me in the clinic, and I'll spend majority of the day just checking out, wisdom teeth for that day.
Well, that's
great because I never, coming out of dental school. What do they teach you? Don't even put a forceps on it. That's something different.
Kyle's got to jump in here. He's a co-host. He has to come up with questions.
I will agree with him. We work at a clinic that's 4 to one to one as far as specialists and general providers. So the opportunity to work, I share an office with an endodontist and a general dentist. So every single day, every eval we do, every exam, if there's a question, I'm like, hey, doc, what do you think about this? He goes, well, in this case, I do this, blah, blah, blah. And then the answer I always get from him is, do you want it? Do you want to do it or do you want me?
That's cool. That's awesome.
Put that on my schedule. That's awesome. Do you want to do it? Did you want me to talk to you about how to do it, or do you got this and you just want to show me when you're done, or I don't even have to tell them about it?
And that's super unique.
And that's how majority of our specials start. It's a cool experience, and I don't know if that's military Navy wide, but it's like that for me, and it's like that for him.
I would encourage y'all and people who are in this interest to freaking take advantage of this, because those courses, to do a freaking third molar extraction course or an advanced endotype course, that could be like 5-10 grand, for us out here in the private sector. So that's phenomenal, bang for your buck that you're getting to be able to do that, and you're doing it, I'm under the hood of the military anyways. So from a liability standpoint, I imagine that's definitely a better place to be doing things.
Which does bring up one thing I will say. And Chris, you can maybe bring on this. When was the last time you discussed money? Or hey, let's do this because this costs this, or let's not do this. That's the best thing about this.
Right.
So I have not considered money one bit. And I mean in the sense of my patient's affordability is not, it's not an issue.
That's cool.
And it
allows you to really just focus on the clinical aspect and, expanding your professional expertise in that regard. But, really, honestly, the last time I looked at the figures was for the fit rep, when the fit rep, for anyone who doesn't know, is essentially kind of the military resume, that you provide each year to, that kind of goes toward your promotions. If you're looking to make it a career, you're looking to promote to the next rank, your fit rep is kind of your resume per se. So numbers come into play there, obviously, but
I will say as a general dentist that that must be nice, because I know I have a couple of headache cases out there right now that I don't like seeing the person just because I'm making compromises based on what they need. And if I could actually just do what they needed,
dude, that
it'd be
so
a slam
hard.
Dunk case.
That freaking comes back to bite
yeah.
us.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times
all
that
my headache,
right
like
now?
All my headache cases I have out there are, or at least 95% of them are based on people that I've made compromises with them
you're
to reduce
to
costs. Yeah. And then it always bites you in the ass.
Well, and I'll turn that around on Christian Gannon YouTube, but I mean, I think that's going to be a hard adjustment. Probably back when you go back in, you know, if you go, I don't
sure.
know, you know, but going in the prize, just trying to figure out, man, going from selling free dentistry to selling, you know,
well,
$2,000 dentistry.
Yeah. This idea of like, you know, you fix these things, and I have 100% trust for my patients. They are getting, they know that I have no motivation other than to give them what they need. If anything, they probably think, you know, this guy's not going to do work that he doesn't want to do. So
yeah.
he's only going to do what I need.
There's no benefit to him
benefit
producing more or less.
So
yeah.
So they're getting exactly what they need, and I see that, and I'm wondering at times, you know, I feel for you guys, it's like, how do you tell this patient when you can clearly tell there's an open margin on
dude,
this X-ray, and you gotta redo this crown because it's struggling, but the patient's in there saying, well, my crown's fine.
Yeah.
Why are you doing this?
And I have kids in college.
Hey, why are you fixing what I have no issue with, clinic? You know, at this current moment,
it's hard,
and that. Whereas they, you know, your patients have this trust in you, and they look at you and they're like, for us, they're like, that's awesome. Like, I didn't know that I had this issue, and you're fixing that for me. Thank you so much. So that's a cool aspect for us, but that's a definitely a reality that it will change. And you hope that your patients continue to trust you, and that's why you got to be a good provider. So that's why I think for us, I think you know, as far as you talk about our preparation to enter private practice at whatever point that happens, is that you know, we've only been motivated by doing what's needed, which I you know, everyone wants to think they're that, and that hopefully that's true, but you know, money's never been a motivation for us. So no. If anything, maybe we're not as aggressive as we should be. I don't know, you know.
Well, I think the beauty of it is, and I think it'll transition fine, because I think ultimately you're going to find, because what Kyle's saying and what we struggle with is like, yeah, you know, we as dentists, like, we want to be liked. Like, we want our patients to like us, and that kind of can be a problem sometimes, because, like, you try to, like, if they're like, like, if they need a crown, they need a crown, right? But if you're like, well, I'll do a MODBL, you know, we do composite in the real world. I know you've done something.
Hold on. Get this, yeah.
What I'm just giving
do
you time.
What is needed.
But then you, and it comes back to bite you in the ass when you try to be a freaking hero, because then you're the one that's what I, and that's a goal for 2018 for me, is like, I want to stop enabling my patients. Like, I want to stop being the crutch for them. I want them to own their problems, if that makes sense.
I want to add something real quick. Hey, Chris. Is there any instruction one way or another on how much composite versus amalgam you place?
Not to my knowledge.
That's a negative. All right, yeah. Just making sure.
Okay, so
the amalgam they just slam on some amalgams because they like
this
them.
This is a good transition. Though, yeah. I do, so the next thing I want to talk about is technology and like, okay, how is, so your opportunity in the military to do, like, you know, I know we were talking about earlier that y'all have CEREC, which is awesome. What kind of, the big thing when we talk about all this endo and comb and stuff, I've been thinking of is, you know, do y'all have comb beams? Do y'all use comb beam?
Yes.
How is technology being utilized in the military versus, you know, talk about that a little bit.
Oh yeah. I mean, we have a oral maxillofacial radiologist, and we use comb beam technology just at the recruiting station, you know, and these are recruits. So the goal is to get them through their training with as minimal, you know, treatment as possible, just to get them into a deployable status, essentially, you know. And we still have that technology available just at the recruiting station. So I know, you know, when I worked at the hospital, you know, there was no shortage of technology there, you know, obviously. But, you know, that's going to change, you know, at different clinics wherever you go, you know.
I think for us, I mean, we're so different from, you know, we're up near D.C., so we're near Bethesda and Walter Reed. So, you know, we're 45 minutes away from the hub of medical and dental, you know, technology, as far as the forefront and what's happening. And we have
sure.
the ability to use, and we do use all that. I would say that, you know, I guess the challenge would be that you got to maintain yourself to be motivated to keep using that technology. It's not that hard of a challenge, but it is a challenge in the sense that you need to utilize it. You know, And so at the end of the day, if something works and you're used to using it, then yeah, you can keep using it. And, you know, it'll get the job done and it's critically acceptable and it's going to take care of that Marine or sailor, then, you know, it's easy to keep using that. But you need to look at your colleagues and you need to maybe listen to that podcast that your friend keeps telling you to listen to. And you keep reminding yourself, hey, maybe I do need to stay on the forefront and, you know, talk to my supply and say, hey, sure, let's order that machine.
Let's try this. Let's use this.
Let's keep doing that. And so that's what's nice is that the limitations, it's as much as you want to push.
So self-motivation becomes a huge thing.
Absolutely. It's probably not as easy, you know, if you're in private practice. In private practice, sure, you make a judgment call on your own or with your group and you say, okay, let's do this. Let's order this. Let's start implementing this in our practice. In the Navy, you know, it's a much bigger organization. So that's something you want to incorporate. There's a hierarchy to go through.
Well, I don't think that's a
negative, you know,
by any means.
Exactly.
You know, that's not, I mean, that's
it's
just,
not, but I think as a provider, and depending on your personality, you know, and what you're looking for in your profession and how you want to handle it day to day, some people may or may not align with that, you know.
Here's a question I had, is the systems you use kind of like Navy specific? Like, does everyone use the same Endo system, or like, is it more Brent? So it can be completely unique to that
provider to provider. Yeah,
that's cool.
We have provider, and I mean, yeah, it's provider based what they want. And you know, you have your supply, you talk to supply, you talk to Henry Schein,
well,
you order
awesome
whoever you want.
That's a huge thing. I mean, to be able to be in the military and try to use different stuff, versus
sure,
like what I graduate, I'm like freaking like, I have no idea what these materials are. I'm trying to use them and doing what. Given all this, though, I do want to bring in a special guest. We got our two military guys. I want to bring in a military wife. I want to bring in a military wife. Chris, if you don't mind, we're going to bring in your wife because I do want to hear.
Take it away, Brittany.
What is it, Brittany? What's it been like being the bride of a dentist in the military and moving across the country from Tennessee to California? Tell us a little about your journey.
Well, I will say, it was great.
I've
had a few up and downs. It was hard at first because I was moving away from my family,
sure,
and my friends.
Yeah.
So that was not fun at first. But then I kind of took it all in and realized that I was having a great adventure and I was in San Diego and I should take it all in and all the experiences. And then I got to move to South Carolina and it's been beautiful.
So y'all back in South Carolina?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. Wow, you're right there. Okay,
it's
perfect.
It's fast moves with the military.
That's fantastic. So, okay. So how did... What was as the wife part? What were his? You tell us the real good stuff. Like what were his hours like? Was he there? Is he busy?
Well, his GPR kind of sucked. It was kind of horrible. But I mean, it was hard. Like he was at work from 5 in the morning, and sometimes he wouldn't come home until 3 in the morning.
These are though.
Right. And so it was difficult. And then he would be on call a whole lot. And so there would be times where he would come home at midnight and then be called out again at 3 a.m. in the morning and not come home till 5 to be back at work at 6. So that kind of sucked.
Chris,
but
I kind of want to pipe you back in here if you don't mind. So during the GPR and you're on call and stuff, what's a common thing you're getting called back in for?
You know, that's actually pretty wide because I saw a wide range of things that I thought I would never see. You know, I saw you know, just everything from like, you know, a simple vestibular space infection, you know, to someone who
you probably play
a
much bigger role than you're used to, I imagine.
Exactly. You know, I mean, I had the ED call me on a case for suspected Ludwigs, you know, and that was a case that
you're like breaking out the textbook.
Yeah, I was like, whoa, Ludwigs. I was like, I do remember that is really serious.
Yeah.
And so I was like, why is the ED calling me on this?
Yeah.
But it was exciting, you know?
Oh,
and
yeah,
I was like,
sure,
they're consulting me on this.
And you're not going to get that. You're not going to get that experience doing your typical.
Oh, no. And what I realized in my GPR, too, is that, you know, I respect the medical, you know, profession. You know, they do so much knowledge. But when it comes to dentistry, you know, it's a very limited amount of knowledge that they have in that regard. So I did my ENT rotation, for example, and I had to go to a meeting in the morning. I presented a case, and I was scheduled in the main OR just to shadow these ENTs on some of the cases they were doing as part of my rotation. And I remember storming through the doors, and the ENT staff looks at me, and the anesthesiology staff, they're like, oh my God, yes, you're here. And I'm like, what? They're like, he's a dentist. He's on rotation here. This is perfect. And I'm like, okay, this can't be good. I'm like, why is this entire room looking at me? You know, normally I'm just a fly on the wall, just, you know, observing. And what happened is during the intubation, they had actually subluxated one of the teeth, or completely luxated the tooth, actually.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was a post-incor endotreated tooth, you know, but I was getting all these mixed opinions. You know, anesthesiologist was coming to me saying, you know, okay, look, I think it's an implant, okay? And I think the implant's fractured, and part of the tooth is, like, left loose. And I'm like, okay. And then, you know, the head ENT surgeon's coming in. He's like, I don't know. I think it's, like, a big filling, and the part of the filling is fractured. And I'm like, okay, well, it's like, well, let's just take a look. Let's get a PA and take a look and see what's going on, you know. But, you know, just being on call, I saw the point being is, especially in a hospital setting, is there is no shortage of things, you know, I didn't see. I saw everything from trauma to head and neck infections, and it was great.
So, question, because I imagine you get a lot more medical interactions than we do, because I'm guessing that you're in the same kind of, and or correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm guessing you're kind of probably, you have more interaction with the medical providers on base. So what is it like working with them? Or do you get much relationship there? Or is it pretty specific?
I think when I worked in the hospital during my residency, I had a little more interaction because just of the patient, you know, the patient base that I was working with.
I think
that
might just be because of where you're stationed right now.
Right.
Paris Islands Dental Clinic is a standalone clinic.
Yeah. Okay. So then you're going to have zero.
And how many providers? There are 40 providers there. Isn't that right?
59.
Shit. So,
and that's between Paris Island and the air station. Yeah, so two branch clinics.
So a massive, here's another side fact. That's obviously an interesting, you know, experience as far as you put 59 dentists or, you know, I guess at the main clinic, there's 40. However, you know, that's a learning experience in itself right there, as far as being able to bounce ideas and learn. But for a different naval experience, you know, at our clinic, we're not a standalone clinic. We are medical, pharmacy, optometry, audiology. We have everything in the same building.
You have a lot of resources at your disposal.
Yeah, and that's part of the community. Also, you know, as far as, you know, I know these people clinically, and I know them as far as inner referrals and within the office. We also know as far as, you know, I mean, we have a ward room, which Chris will know about, you as far as the officers club. That's, we know them socially, so it's you know, getting to know the pharmacists and the different medical providers, you know them personally, and so I know their style and I know the type of quality care that I'm getting when I have a patient that, you know, is maybe off on their meds or maybe their blood pressure is a little bit questionable. Now I know who I'm working with, that it's just downstairs. It's not, I don't have to worry about sending someone across town and then wondering, did they actually go to their provider or did they just come back another day and say they did? If they have
high blood pressure, you could actually kind of do something about it.
I have immediate care.
Yeah, that's cool.
We're covered in every sense from all medical issues. And then, I mean, it pops up and it's awesome to know that you have that. And they love it too, because they're like, doc, everyone calls each other doc. That's a thing. So they're like, doc, I know what was wrong with his tooth, and he kept complaining about it, and for some reason he came to medical, but we knew he needed to come to you, and, you know, rather than, you know, just knowing that I can send him up to you, and it's taken care of
That's nice. Yeah.
So it's a fun team that you're a part of.
Okay, so you've both been in 2 years. You both have 2 years to go, correct?
I've got one more, because the GPR and the AGD, those are neutral years, so they don't count toward your years of service. But they don't add any years of obligation. So for me, I've got one more year than Gannon, even though we graduated the same class.
So you've been through a couple years of this. What is like the last year for you, Chris, and the next 2 years look like for you, Gannon? As far as like, are there certain things you want to try to accomplish while in there, or you want to do, or how do you take advantage of the remainder of your what's the word, contracted time with the military?
I think within any contract, you have the, you know, the initial, I want to get settled. I want to establish my place within this practice that I'm working with. And then, you know, for myself, I said, knowing that I'm at Quantico, I'm in a position that has the ability to take deployments. We've had a lieutenant that went to Bahrain and she's loving it over there. We've had deployments on, you know, the Navy will put out requests, say, hey, we need someone that's going to volunteer for this. And coming out of Quantico, you have the ability to take this. So that's why I volunteered for my opportunity to go down to Central America. So that was, you know, you get established, you look for your opportunities. Awesome. And then I think the key is you take advantage of your specialist. And it's like, you can't go say it enough and saying how willing and awesome they are, as far as, because of their, you know, they've just finished residency. You know, I think anyone that knows that, you know, that's been through a residency, you're in a teaching environment and you have that experience. And the Navy really nurtures and really encourages and almost requires that they keep that kind of attitude. And yeah. So I've never come across specialists that wasn't
awesome.
Excited to teach, wasn't willing and wants to, you know, share what they have and give everything that, you know, that you're willing to listen for.
So Chris?
It's a good experience.
I mean, I agree. You know, taking advantage of the specialists is key. You know, especially if you're interested in specializing, and whether or not you want to do that in the service, out of service, you know, after you're done with your obligation. You know, I think taking advantage of the opportunities that you have given, the fact that, you know, you can focus strictly on the clinical aspect of dentistry and not having to worry about the business or administrative side too much is great for developing.
Oh, especially
because that's the advantage that we have, is that I work in an office where money doesn't exist. And patient, you know, what they can afford is not an issue. The only concern is what is best for this patient. And so you get to see you combine that with these specialists, you get to do some unique things where when was the last time you pulled some thirds and reimplanted them in the first?
Not a lot. That's freaking badass.
Yeah, right?
You can do that.
That's
real.
The thing. You pull the tricks out. You do that studies talk about. I mean, a lot of these studies come from this. So it's like,
yeah.
So that's a unique experience.
Okay, so, and kind of as we wrap this up, because I do want to, I appreciate y'all being so open, and this has been great. Brandy, thank you. Appreciate all y'all for being here. I don't want you to tell me, I know that there's a lot that goes into what your plans are and your things are, but how does it work when you end your contract year? Are there opportunities to stay in the military long term, get out? Kind of tell me how that process works. I mean, I don't, you know, just in general.
So, I mean, for the military, it's all about retention, you know, so however they can keep you in longer, you know, that's ultimately their goal. And their goal is to try and, especially with specialists, is to retain those specialists, you know, so, you know,
they got a lot of money invested in those guys.
Exactly. So, you know, it's, you know, there's a lot of thought that needs to go into, you know, about what you want to do, what you're looking into, you know, if you want to specialize, you know, if you're going to do that in the service, if you're going to get out, et cetera, whatever. But the doors are wide open. The opportunities are there for you. And you have so many people that you can talk to make that decision. There's really no restriction as to what you can do. It's essentially all on your shoulders.
Does it become, say you get done, do you have another contract kind of timeline, or like, how does it work for people who want to stay?
Gotcha. So let's say, for example, you got to the end of your orders.
Yep.
Or end of your obligation. You were like, you know what? Maybe I want to stay in a little bit longer. Maybe I want to go overseas. Maybe I just want to go overseas and, you know, extend my service. Orders are usually going to be for 2 to 3 years.
Okay.
So depending on where you go, you're signing on to another contract, 2 to 3 years. And it kind of goes from there. Specializing, you know, usually put in your application kind of actually a year before you actually start. So depending on what you want to specialize in, you know, it's going to kind of dictate where you go.
So can you not start, that kind of ties that in, can you not start your specialty until you finish your contracted years?
No, you can, during your payback for dental school, if you get accepted to residency, you can start your residency.
So
you can,
Chris,
do double
like
time.
If he decided he wanted to do endo, he could apply this year to Navy Endo. And
yes, that is.
Is that location specific? Is that a branch thing? Like,
no,
you apply
that is military wide. That is a huge advantage. You can pay back your obligation for dental school
during a residency.
Wow.
Yeah, that's huge.
And not be added time. That is a. You know, I mean,
so for people who are committing to military and dental school
doing.
Who are gunners, there's a bit.
Yeah.
The opportunities are there to really take advantage.
And it's pretty rare. You know, the military doesn't do this a whole lot. There still are some people who do. But some students will get accepted into a residency program right out of school. So, you know, I mean, if you're a hard gunner, you're top of your class. And you feel like you have that opportunity, go ahead and apply for it. You don't need to do an AGD or a GPR. I mean, if you don't get accepted to the residency, go ahead and apply for the GPR and the AGD. And, you know, it's not going to really be an issue. Yeah. But
and, uh, Another kind of wild card that comes up here is how many specialties are within military? First off, so what? Yeah, you know, civilian specialties:
oral surgery, perio, endo, and pros.
Chris can vouch for me here. Isn't it 15 as far as recognized specialties?
So I get, I know
that implantology is actually trying to become a
oral maxillofacial radiology.
Radiology is another one. That's another one. Yeah.
Oral facial pain.
Straight up exodontia residency in the military is
wow.
Comp
exodontia.
Dentistry.
Yeah.
What is exodontia? Extraction teeth.
Extraction only. You're,
wow. So we have a one.
And we have one in ours, and they are extremely valuable units because. I mean, you can imagine.
Fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
I just shucked teeth.
Come on. Every dentist here listening, knows how satisfying it is to pull a tooth. And that's all you do.
That's especially shucking teeth? Oh, yeah. Wow.
So, military needs us, too.
I agree. Trust
no,
me.
The same, but
how many kids come into school? 18.
18, they're going. They need a special one thing. And the surgeons then can focus on more complex surgery at that point, especially trauma surgery.
I agree, because that becomes a problem in the private sector is you have a group, you have oral surgeons more and more oral surgeons who want to freaking do implants and do wisdom teeth. And we're missing out on a like complex oral surgery deal, but.
I have to look at the specifics, but the opportunities as far as.
Comp dentistry is the big one.
What is comp dentistry? I don't understand. Y'all look even puzzled.
So.
We don't really know.
It's a 2-year residency. In advanced general dentistry. As a comp dentist in the military, you get a specialty pay. So you get paid as a specialist.
Treatment planner? Because I kind of could see like you're a treatment planner, maybe.
Similar. It's kind of like.
I mean, I think the benefit.
Like a prosthodontist, but you do everything?
You're in the military.
No?
If you're in the military.
That's what I would think. Yeah. Like a prosthodontist.
In the military, you stand the financial bonus of being a specialist, which is a signing bonus and a. Yeah, there's a financial incentive to do it. As far as if you did that and then we're looking at going private practice, you can consider it as extra training. In your training, if you do comp, you come out to private practice, you're ready to rock at that point.
So you get paid nothing in the military, right?
What do you mean?
This is a dumb question.
Now you get paid as a officer.
So they're paying and you get paid as an officer.
You get paid as an officer, and you also get specialty pay because you're a professional that brings a trade.
Are you allowed to disclose a lawyer? Like what that is?
I mean, it's public. You look it up.
Okay, perfect.
It's a simple Google.
We'll put it in the show notes.
These days.
We'll put it in the show notes. Average pay for it.
It's out there. I mean, as far as you make as an officer, as a naval officer, okay. And then you make.
You get specialty pay, which you get basically an
incentive paid for the fact that you're a specialist.
Look, at the end of the day, I think this has been awesome because what's the number one question we get from most listeners is like, what do I do with debt? Right. And this, what y'all are doing is eliminating debt, giving you tons of invaluable experience and, basically setting you up for a lot of success, whether you stay in or don't stay in the military. So I think this is a very utilized opportunity by a lot of people.
I think the big question a lot of people have is they're like, is it going to be worth it to me?
And so answer that question. Has it so far, do you feel like this has been a worthwhile? And
to me,
that's kind of a loaded question because I don't want you to know.
100%.
So
and I think the biggest advice that I have for people is, you can't talk to one particular person in the military about their experience and make a judgment call for your life because Gannon's experience and my experience had been different.
Which I think is cool.
Which is cool.
I had no idea that. I thought it would have been like very, very like
similar.
Regimented. Like we all use.
Structured.
This
right.
endo. We all
that's
use
what
this
I thought
composite.
It was gonna, to be honest,
like,
I thought it was going to be
no
like
freedom.
That.
Right.
Oh, when and I thought so, that, I you can do what you want. Like within our practice. So you go back to the whole composite amalgam thing. Because that's what everyone thinks. That we all.
Well, I make a joke, right?
That's
a good
thing
to say.
That's a legit thing. No, we have within our practice at Paris Island. There were plenty of providers that were predominantly amalgam based and were placing, you'd see these amalgam crowns.
Wow.
Incredible. The detail.
That's a lot of work.
Full custom coverage amalgam. And it's funny, is that I saw what they were doing there and I see them now because when I work at Quantico, I see these Marine officers are coming back through. There's been serving now for 20 years And I see these.
They're still there.
Still there.
Yep.
Still perfect.
Yep.
You put a crown on that. I'm not touching that crown. That's perfect.
No, I agree.
Don't mess with perfection.
That thing is opening Pandora's box.
Nah, don't mess with that. So we had those dentists that were doing that at our practice down at Paris Island. And, you know, being a more modern trained dentist, I was more inclined to use composite unless I'm working in a swamp or something like that.
Right.
Then, if isolation is an issue, I'd switch more to the amalgam. But it was choice. No one ever told me, you need to do this, you need to do that. The only thing that was ever imparted on me is this in the best interest of this Marine that's in your chair right now? And you better damn believe you better do the right thing for that point. And that's all that matters. And that's a cool, you know, knowing that all that matters is you're doing what's right.
Yeah. Do y'all take pictures of stuff? Do y'all have cameras? Do y'all get to take pictures of anything?
During my residency, it was a little more flexible about the photographs. Now, especially with what happened in Jacksonville, there's definitely a lot more restrictions on, how we're documenting clinical cases and,
I think that
what equipment we're using to actually store and document this imaging
might depend on where you're stationed and what you're doing. Depending on who your clientele is. I mean, these are warfighters. We can't be documenting, can't necessarily be taking pictures all the time. So the restrictions are.
Yeah. What we're saying is it's an opportunity to
develop your portfolio of dentistry, right?
Yeah, right.
When you're doing.
And for me, it's like endo, for example, those are cases that, I would like to document and create a portfolio for, So
yeah, 100%.
I'm able to do that. And we have a clinical camera that I'm able to use. And so it's not a problem in that regard. I don't know how your clinic is.
I think maybe, I don't know. We're moving towards that is what we've been told. But her instruction is, they don't want photography of patient work.
I think that's an okay thing. I get it. I mean, they're obviously in the military. You have to be in the highest protocol of safety and patient autonomy. And I totally get that. So I don't want it to be that thing. But Kyle, you ready to get out of here?
All right.
Anything y'all want to add as we finish up? This has been, I really thank you both because I think this is invaluable and this has been really, really good. And people will really appreciate it.
I think if military is an option you're considering, talk to as many people as you have exposure to. Sully, you can give out my information if they want to reach out to me.
Sorry,
talk
out
to
mine.
Me. I'd
Absolutely.
Be happy to talk to them.
Do you have emails?
Give them the real deal. Do I have email?
What's your email that you would prefer people contact you with?
Because people
would love to, because I'm sure they would, it's a very common question we get. I'm like, I don't know. I freaking just do stuff. Wow, what are your emails?
Chris.Rawson@gmail.com.
Is that your email?
Yes.
Gannon, what's your email?
I said it's Chris.Rawson.
Gannon.V.Allen@hotmail.com.
All right, well, I'm going to post your info because I think it would be appreciated. If y'all are cool with that, I'll post your info.
In all honesty, anyone that reaches out, I would be glad to. Since I would think, especially if you're in dental school and you're considering this, talk to your professors. I'm willing to bet some of them are military because the way career military works.
My boys.
What?
Anchors away.
All right. Love you both, boys. This has been fantastic. Thank you so much. Everybody, work harder, not smarter. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.